Today's episode of Home Row is brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible. The CSB offers an optimal blend of accuracy and readability, which helps readers make a deeper connection with God's Word, and it also inspires lifelong discipleship. The CSB is equally suited for serious study or for sharing with your neighbor hearing God's Word for the very first time. Learn more at csbible.com.
I'm writing.
You know how to write.
Without the writing, you have nothing.
I'm writing.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Home Row. And I'm your host, Jeff Metters. And on today's show, I have fellow writer, of course, an author, and Texan for multiple times. But I think maybe have you moved again? I'm not sure. Lori Ferguson Wilbert is on the show. Lori, how are you?
I'm good. And I've never called myself a Texan. So
I know you are from, I think from reading your blog over the years, you are from like, are you from New York, upstate New York?
Or yeah, I'm from upstate New York.
Okay. Yep. That's what I thought. And so, but you got here and you've lived here multiple times, I think.
Yeah. I moved here in 2009 and then moved away for 2 years and then came back for the past 3 years.
Okay, yeah. Great. And yeah, you're up in the Dallas DFW area and I'm down here in Houston. And we've both got cold weather today.
We did. It's actually like kind of frigid. I've got
my it's nice.
Little socks on.
Yeah, my wife is on her way. So she's probably in Dallas now. She had a work meeting, had to drive up there for a little like 45-minute lunch meeting and then drive all the way back.
Oh, man.
Brutal.
Yeah. Brutal. It's a long drive.
Yeah. So for the people out there, Lori, who don't know who you are, why don't you just share a little bit about yourself and who you are and your writing and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so my name is Lori Wilbert. I think I have been writing since I was 13. Maybe a lot of people say that. Writing a long time. Went to college for English and creative writing and just continued writing all this time. And just released my first book, Handle with Care, with B&H Publishers. And now I'm just kind of on that sort of journey of, all right, first book out 20 years into this thing. I'm just kind of navigating the different waters of what it means to publish a book as opposed to publishing many, many years online and in other spaces.
Yeah. And when you, this is a question I always ask people, guests on the show, when you aren't writing and you write in so many different mediums, not only books and articles and blog posts, but also your Insta stories. You do a lot of blogging and on that, I guess people call it microblogging on Instagram. When you aren't doing those things, what's something you're doing for fun? Let's cancel that reading. Cause then I'd be like, well, I know you love to read. If you're not writing on Instagram, it's pictures of books on Instagram. So what's Lori Wilbert doing for fun?
Yeah, so I love, we're kind of in a little bit of a transition period right now. So life looks a little bit different in February of 2020 than it has looked for us in other seasons. But I think right now for fun, we get to spend a lot of time with one another, my husband and I, which I think in the past that we were spread a little bit thin. And so it's been really, we've really enjoyed that in the past couple months to just spend a lot of one-on-one time together. I mean, we love a good Netflix show. We also really love to hike and camp, but as you said, we live in Dallas-Fort Worth.
It's hard to find, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to find here. So, but those are things we enjoy. We really enjoy like a really good meal with friends, candles and long, deep conversations. Those kind of things we really enjoy.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. Yeah. Camping and stuff in Texas. I mean, I know in hiking people do it, but it's not very exciting.
No.
A lot of flat. There's not a lot of hiking. It's just walking.
Yeah. It's a lot of walking. And I think there are like a lot of poisonous snakes here and that really, I just can't do that.
No.
It scares me.
I'm out. Yeah. Even at my kid's soccer field, there's signs all along the soccer field that say, watch out for poisonous snakes.
Yeah.
Like, why are we here? Like,
talking about a killjoy.
Yeah, like, is there anywhere else we could go? And so I like to call myself an avid indoorsman. That's who I am.
Awesome.
Well, you've got your brand new book, Handle With Care, How Jesus Redeems the Power of Touch in Life and Ministry. This book, it not only, as I know, it's beautifully written because you're just an excellent wordsmith, but it also has a beautiful cover design that will just make people want to pick up the book and check it out. And so thanks for you sent me a little art print too that came with the book. And so it's sitting there over on my shelf. I can look at it from my desk to see the image of Christ washing feet. It's beautiful. So
that's from Stephen Kratz.
Yeah, man, it's so awesome.
Talented artist.
Yeah. So we'll put a link in the show notes to Stephen Kratz. I'm sure he's got a website. And so I'll try to remember to pop that in, and a link so you can go pick up Lori's book on Amazon and wherever else books are sold. So Lori, you've been a popular writer for many years. Your blog has a following, and I'm sure people have been knocking on your email inbox for years to write a book. And so here we are now, your first book. What led you to decide this topic on the power of touch and life and ministry, when you could have written on anything and everything you wanted to? So why this one?
I think it's a combination of two things, and I hope this comes out. I haven't quite articulated this out loud yet, but I think that I think there was a pretty deep sense in my spirit that I needed to wait to publish a book, and I don't know where that came from. I'm not going to say that I'm not going to judge anyone for writing a book at a, you know, in their 20s or 30s, but I think for me, 40 was kind of like, okay, I hope that I will be able to say something at 40 that I'll maybe have fewer regrets about than if I said something at 20. And so that's kind of why it took me so long to write a book, because I just felt like it's just not the right time for me personally. And I think so that juxtaposed with sort of the what we're sort of reckoning with in the culture right now. So we're reckoning with, you know, Me Too, Church Too, sex abuse scandals. But then I think we're also just sort of in if you live in 2020 in America, you're in the midst of a loneliness epidemic. And so just sort of thinking about all of these things, and that juxtaposed with, I feel like this is the time. Like, I feel like I'm there. I'm ready to do this. And so I've had tons of ideas for books through the years, but I think it just kind of needed that perfect sort of synergy to sort of follow through for me. And so, that's why this topic. It's not that I'm more, this is not my life message. I keep telling people that this isn't like the thing that I'm going to go to my grave, pounding the drum of. It's just what was on my heart right now, or 2 years ago when I started writing it, and what the Lord was doing then. And I think, and I pray, and I hope, that it not just scratches the itch that our world kind of has right now, but also, my hope even more was that it would just be sort of a balm to some of the exposed wounds that people are just now kind of realizing that they have, because of everything that's happening in the media right now.
Yeah, I could see how the timing and the timeliness and the urgency for the message is so needed. And you know, I wonder about the process of writing the book. What was it like for you? Obviously, there's a little mention there from 2 years. So, I mean, for listeners out there who aren't all that familiar with the writing process of a book, is that you start with a proposal and a contract and all that stuff, and then you start writing, and then it goes through editing, and then it goes through all these stages, and it could be 2 years, year and a half, from the completion of the book. And so if you can, think back, the process of writing. You come up with the idea. Take us through the process. Did this start in a journal? Did this start in a scratch pad or Word documents? How did it all come together?
I think I think this probably sounds terrible, but it actually came together in the proposal. I think I have gotten really adept at writing great proposals over the past 10 years. none of them saw the light of day, but I just would sort of work out my outline in those spaces. And so that's where it came together.
Yeah,
that's
the spot where you have to do it. Like, it's gotta get done.
And I think having my hand to the fire, in a sense, so to speak, with a proposal there's sort of this element of excellence that I want to bring to it, to writing a proposal. And so that sort of forces my hand to be excellent in my outlining and research and all those things. And so I think that's probably where it really started for me. I'm very much an internal processor. And so when I start to get something on a page, that's when it's taking action for me. And so I am actually pretty hesitant to get things on the page if I haven't decided, okay, I'm going to write about it. Cause otherwise I sort of peter out with, you know, the tip of the iceberg jotting down notes. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. When it becomes, you know, when I think about writing the, you know, a rough like table of contents idea, mm-hmm. I remember jotting it down in my to-do list program and just like a, cause I just needed to find a quick note. Where could I make a quick note? And like, okay, boom. Okay. I could write, obviously you write on the 5 points of Calvinism. So that's five chapters, but mm-hmm. who's going to buy a, you know, or publish a 5-chapter book, like, and that's going to have short chapters. So I need to think of other stuff. Well, we need an introduction, need some stuff about, you know, the problems with Calvinism, then a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And then, okay. And so it just started crafting. But when you do sit down and do the proposal, that's when you start, okay, here we go. And then you write the little chapter summaries. You know, I'm sure every literary agent and publisher, they're all looking for different things and proposals. And some of these are, you know, like I know the agent I have, and the other one I've worked with before too, they have their proposal kind of like system. They've got their, you know, it's not like trademarked, but it's like, hey, this is like one thing that I do.
Yeah, it's like clearly from this agent.
Yeah, yeah. So is there anything in yours that's, you know, not from an agent or anything like that, but like you really want to make sure you include this part or you like spent a lot of time on this part of a proposal that you could share with listeners to encourage them or give them some advice?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the parts that was sort of a non-negotiable in this project was because it's a book on touch, and it's not a book telling people how to touch. That's not it at all. It's a book about thinking how we handle people and doing it with care. But I always knew there are going to be a lot of people reading this book who have an experience of touch that is abusive or unpleasant. And so from the very beginning, a letter to those who've been abused was included in the proposal. And I think that surprised me a little bit, just not in like a, I guess it surprised me because I just thought it's a very personal thing. And it's very hard to speak to that in a personal way in a book that's, you know, going out to hundreds of people. And so, that would be something that was included in my proposal that might not be included in. It's sort of a chapter, but it's not a chapter. It's definitely an afterword.
When you were writing the book, I'm like 99% certain that you maintained your same writing output. In all your other various ways. Is that true?
Yeah, it is.
which is tough.
Which is
really tough. And so how did you do that? Because I know for me, I'm not as a skilled writer as you. And so it's like my energies and stuff, where it's going somewhere else when I had to write Humble Calvinism. And so for you, what did that look like?
Yeah, and I wouldn't recommend this to anyone, but I think I got burned out in that. I think I hit the beginning of last summer, and just as we were heading into the sort of deep editing process for the book, and man, I was just burned out because I had continued writing. And I think there's some element to a writer, most people who are kind of, this is their side hustle or their main hustle. For me, it's my main hustle. I don't like the word hustle. I don't know why I said that, but
I know that was a very un-Lori moment, but I like it. It was a,
thanks. There is this sort of in this very, it's almost like a slave master feeling of like, I've got to make money. I've got to keep making money. And so that voice doesn't really shut up for me very quickly. And it's not that we're hurting for finances, but I do want to be a workman who's worthy of wages. And so I want to be putting out faithful work that's worth getting paid for. And so I think that was a really, really difficult sort of transition for me was, okay, you're writing this book. You already got paid for it. You don't need to like be breaking your back writing all these other articles and pieces. Right. And so I think if I, you know, moving forward, you know, you learn, and I think in the future I'll do a better job at saying, hey, I'm not publishing anywhere except for, I'm not working on any writing except for on this book for this period of time. And my contract was only 3 months, so.
Ooh, that's tight.
It was really tight. And
this is not a short book.
Say what?
And this is not a short book.
No.
231 no. pages, I think, if I look real quick. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And so I worked really hard for a short period of time, and I got really burnt out, I think, after it was over. So I still feel that in some ways.
Yeah.
Still feel burnt out.
Yeah, I could see that. And I felt a similar, you know, kind of predicament where, you know, you get opportunities to write at places that, you know, invite you to come and write or whatever. And you are being paid to write this book. You've agreed to write this book. They've paid you in advance to write this book. Mm. And then this website's asking, like, hey, would you come and write this thing? But like, man, I'd love to, but you're not paying me. Mm-hmm. Like the kind of payment is like, you get to be on the platform. I'm like, yeah, that's not as appealing to me anymore when the time that it takes and my efforts and energies. And so I think that is a real battle. Of course, if you've got other commitments and stuff like that to places, that's different. But I totally understand that. What was it look like in your schedule? Would you work on the book in the mornings and do other stuff during the day? Or just, I mean, during those 3 months, it was just, all right, we got to marathon this.
Yeah, I was at my desk at 8 a.m. and I was there until, I mean, I'd take a break to eat lunch and take a walk. But yeah, I was either writing or reading 8 hours a day, for those 3 months. And that was, you know, also including the other writing that I was having to do in that period of time. So it was, yeah, it was kind of just the grind for that time.
It sounds so,
it was exhausting.
Yeah. It's so non-glamorous from what most people think the writing life is like.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, you know, I'm sure you get this question too. Like, how do I publish a book, or how do I get where you are? How do I get a blog with that many readers? And I just think it's not glamorous. You sit down at your desk and you write and you keep writing. And if no one's reading your site after 10 years, then maybe go back to the drawing board and reconsider whether this is really what God's calling you to do. But it is not glamorous. And it's not, I think people see they see numbers, they see follower numbers, and they think that there must be something super special about that. And there isn't really anything super special. If anything, I was thinking about that this week, if anything, there's more pressure on you to, just more pressure in general when those numbers start going up. And so it is, in a lot of ways, I wish I could, you know, trade today for 10 years ago and just be, you know, relatively unknown again. And, you know,
I'm with you. The whole, it is work. It's not this like log cabin, pine trees in the background, snow caps, mountains, and cute little dog. I mean, there are cute little dogs running around, but it's not the same as the real life by yourself at the desk, back hurting, coffee's cold. And then you publish.
I think it's, go ahead. It's interesting too. I think I've had those moments, you know, where I'm like, okay, I'm going to get away for a week and go stay in a cabin. And I've produced absolutely nothing of worth in those times. And
sweet I think, trip, you know, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet trip. But like where the world work comes through is interaction with people and, you know, toiling, sweating, not always pleasant, being disciplined. That is where the work comes through. So I think the sort of glamorous, picturesque idea of a writer, and I'm not nothing against, you know, a writer's space, a room of one's own. Wendell Berry has a 40 pane glass window, and that's my dream writing space. So nothing against that, but I just think it's not real life necessarily to go away from life to write. You kind of have to be in life to write.
Yeah, and you don't need those things. You can start now. Or like you can, wherever you're at the end of this episode, you could bust out your phone and your, you know, journal, laptop, and you could write a 500 word, you know, devotional or whatever. I mean, you could knock it out wherever, at your kid's soccer practice, or, you know, in the parking lot while you're waiting for your, you know, spouse to come out of the store or whatever, instead of flipping through Twitter again and Facebook again and Instagram again, there's time to write.
Yeah. Probably, I don't know, 15 years ago, I had a little, I don't know, it was a blogger site, and it was called, or Blogspot, I think. It was called 5 Minute Crush, and I hope it doesn't exist anymore. No, but
we gotta look.
But I would take 5 minutes, and I would write about something straight for 5 minutes, and every single day I would do this. And, you know, sometimes it was the person I talked to at the coffee shop, or the way the grocery store smelled or whatever. It was just something that I noticed during that day. And that was actually, I look back, I'm like, that was so formative. I teach a writing mentorship, and I just tell them writing, we have to practice at writing just like anyone has to practice scales or practice, you know, hitting balls or whatever it is you do. You got to practice those things, and it's not glamorous, and it doesn't look like it's producing much fruit, but it is. It just doesn't look like it.
Right. That's so true. Well, I have good news for you. I cannot find the 5 Minute Crush.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
So I Googled 5 Minute Lori Ferguson blogger. Nothing.
Great.
So just sayable.net. But, you know, the internet never forgets. And so if I was tech savvy enough to know how to work the Wayback Machine or whatever, I'm sure we could find it. And so
I have to remember, I think the URL wasn't 5 Minute Crush. I just, the name of the site was, I can't remember what the URL was though. So
yeah, I'm not giving up.
Okay.
This is my resolution for 2020. I made no resolutions, but this one to find the 5 Minute Crush from Lori Ferguson. That's a great idea. I mean, a great exercise, great writing prompt. Just to talk about, you know, I took the GRE test this week for my PhD application at Southern Seminary, and it was a nightmare, but there was a writing prompt. There was an analytical writing section, and I had to write a short essay in 30 minutes in response to this statement, whether I agree or disagree. And it was, an individual's greatness can only be determined by those who come after them, not their contemporaries. That was it. And you've got 30 minutes to say whether you agree or disagree with the thing. They give you some scratch paper and to write. I was sitting there laughing. I'm like, what in the world am I doing right now with my life?
It throws back to like SAT questions and all that. Yes. Oh, gosh.
Oh, it was a nightmare.
PTSD from that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did manage to talk about Michael Jordan. Because anytime the word greatness, I'm like, greatness. Oh, you got to talk about the GOAT. So I talked about how, hey, you know, studying game film versus playing against Michael Jordan, that's a lot different. I think the people that have firsthand experience and say he's great is different than some 40-year-old analyst sitting on their couch watching Michael Jordan play and, well, was he great or not or whatever. But who cares? So with writing,
You care, obviously.
I do care because I'm still thinking about the test, and I did horrible on it too. And
I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Yeah,
Just gotta pass it.
Yeah, just gotta not do horrible. So I don't think I did horrible, but we'll find out how horrible I did. You know, I'm always wondering, like with writers who, you know, we talked about writing space, and I always hear from listeners how they love just to, you know, this is kind of like the moment in the show. Do you remember that show on MTV, Cribs? Did you ever see the show?
Barely. Yeah, like in a college.
Yes.
Dorm room or something.
So like they would take you to, I don't know. They take you to a rapper's house and you'd see his crib, or they take you to an athlete's house, and you'd see their house. You'd see their crib, you know? And so now this is like the part of the show where it's like writer's crib. The space. With the
Are you gonna make me describe what is on my desk right now?
No. Oh, you can. Name three things on your desk.
Oh, shoot. Cough drops, sand timer, hourglass, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Matches.
Matches. Okay. Are they like cool, funky matches, or is it like matches from some restaurant?
They're actually kind of cool.
Yeah. Gotta be cool matches. Yeah. Okay. I'll name three things on my desk. I have Edison lamp thing. I won't mention podcast gear because that's lame. I have a John Calvin bobblehead on my desk. And then I have, how typical, I have a Spurgeon. I won't mention Spurgeon, so scratch that. I have a Russell Westbrook bobblehead from the Houston Rockets too. So I got bobbleheads all over my, I got a James Harden bobblehead. There's a Spurgeon one.
I have
one.
No bobbleheads.
Oh, you got to get bobbleheads. Or Funko Pops. Have you ever heard of those?
No, I don't.
Are you a fan of The Office?
I mean, yes, I've seen it. I like Parks and Rec more.
Okay, well, I bet they have Parks and Rec Funko Pops. So I have like a Michael Scott little like figurine and all this stuff. And Dwight. Yeah, it's great.
Funko Pops.
Yeah, Funko Pops. F-U-N-K-O. So this episode is brought to you by Funko Pop and all of your Fun Pop needs. Go to FunkoPop.com and put in the code HOMERUN.
They look like emojis.
Yeah, they have really giant heads, big eyes. So I've got Dwight. I have a Thanos. I have a Groot Funko Pop. Not all these are on my desk. These are like on my shelves and stuff. It sounds like my desk is just filled with toys. But they're all over my study. So now, else in your space, what kind of candle when you're sitting down to write? Do you have like a particular candle? Like, what are some of your like writing like quirkiness? Like, okay, I'm gonna do these things. So I sit down to get into my space, to get into the zone.
I have a playlist that I follow on Spotify called like Focus or something like that that I always listen to because it really helps me just zone out. I don't actually, surprisingly, I have matches, but no candle in here.
That is surprising.
I don't like scented candles. And so
kind of candle is there?
We usually just burn beeswax candles. I don't know why scented candles like make me nauseous.
Like no scent at all?
Yeah, no scent.
I didn't even know such a thing existed.
Well, I didn't know Funko Pops existed.
Look at that. We're both learning
stuff.
We're
educating each other.
We're both learning. So the longs, like wick, beeswax candles, those just, I mean, they just got to smell like something, like smoke or fire. Does fire have a smell?
Beeswax.
They smell like beeswax. Man, yeah. I need to mine some beeswax. Okay. Yeah. I have a leather candle in here that doesn't actually smell that great. So I don't do that one anymore, but I have a Bath and Body Works. Like an air, like it's liquid, like a diffuser type thing of mahogany and teak wood. And it's amazing. It smells incredible. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so you mentioned your music, your beverage. So are you tea?
Yorkshire Gold black tea. I gave up coffee last summer and I have tried to give up coffee 100 times before and it never worked out. And this time it did. It took. So
okay.
Yorkshire Black Gold
Tea. Black Gold Tea. Are these...
Yorkshire Gold Tea.
Yorkshire Black Tea. Are these K-cups or are they regular tea bags?
Just tea bags or loose leaf tea.
Okay. So I feel like a total moron with loose leaf tea. When you get loose leaf tea, like what am I supposed to do with this stuff?
Oh, you get a little tea, like a tea drainer sort of thing that sort of sits in your hot water. So it works like a tea bag, but it's just reusable.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. I feel totally out of touch. And I feel like this is
I mean, becoming... you drink fancy coffee, right?
I do. Yep. Super fancy.
Yeah, so there's fancy tea too.
That makes sense. There's fancy everything.
Yeah.
You think about it. There is a finer things club for everything on the planet. I feel like this show's derailing. I think we're just having a conversation now about stuff we like in our writing spaces.
I actually, just before I sat down to do this podcast, I looked at my desk and I thought, oh my Lord, this has to get cleaned. So there's a lot on my desk right now.
There's many things I can mention on my desk. Books that sit on here that I'm supposed to be reading that I'm not reading.
Yes.
The books that you put up.
Stacks of books.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm going to read this. I'm going to read a couple pages of this book every day. Well, that hasn't happened for 2 years. But that book is still there. People think I'm reading it. That's at least if I'm not reading it, at least people think I'm reading it. So that's good.
My aim is like to not post a book unless I've actually read it. That's my, like, that's how I police myself around that.
Oh, that's a good strategy. And I bet you get a lot of books for free too in the mail.
I get a ton of books,
Yeah.
for free. And I feel bad about not posting about them because
I
I know
know, I
who's
feel
an
compelled.
author. Yeah, I do feel compelled, but I have learned, I think am learning, I shouldn't say have learned. I think I am learning that, well, first of all, I want to have integrity, and so I don't want to be telling people that I'm reading something that I'm not actually reading and engaging with or have read and engaged with. That's part of it. But then I think another part of it is just I don't want to convey to people that I have, more hours in my day than they have in yours. So
Yeah.
I can't read 5 books a week. I can read one a week. And so, yeah.
That's good. With the book, there's two other things I want to talk about before we left. One, I want us to talk about your writing mentorship program. We'll finish with that. But last thing about your book, I want to make sure we give proper time to this book is, books get written for all kinds of reasons. But there's a huge reason. And one of them is, what drives authors, what drives writers is what we hope listeners will learn as they read, what we, how we hope listeners will be affected, as they read. So when someone finishes Handle with Care, as they journey through reading it, what's something you hope happens, to the reader?
Yeah, I think as I was reading through the Gospels, so the book for the listener, the book walks through the Gospels and how Jesus interacts with his followers and Pharisees and others who are around him, other humans who are around him, how he interacts with them and engages them with care. And I think as I was walking through those, what I realized is that there was a pause in those interactions. Like Jesus had a pause. He had to take time away from whatever he was doing or might have been doing in order to do what his father was calling him to do. And I think it's so easy. I mean, you and I are guilty of this too. We just go through life and we don't ever pause to think about our own stories. We don't pause to think about how we've been formed by since infanthood, since even, in some ways before we were born. We've been formed by the way that people handle us and the way that people not just touch us, but the way that they care for us or don't care for us in for good or for bad. And so I think my prayer is that people would read this book and that they would say, oh, I need to pause and I need to look at my story in a honest way. Because to deny that we need the healing of Jesus today, not just, back then for whatever it was that we walked through and saw his healing, but we need his healing today. To deny that we need that is to deny Jesus in some ways, to deny the fact that he's our savior today, just as much as he was when he first saved us. And so that's my prayer, that people would be able to look at their story, be honest with it, be honest with the way that they have healed and harmed others with their hands. And I think to be circumspect in that, I don't want a book that needs to be, causing dramatic life change from day one. I want it to be a book that is taken back into communities and conversations where a lot of reflection is happening.
Amen.
Sorry if that was too heavy.
No, not at all. That's yeah, I mean the topics in your book are huge. And they can be really heavy for some people. And Christ, he comes to us saying, I do have burdens for you, and I but they're light. And I can make these things less heavy, and my yoke's easy, my burden's light. So come and learn from me. And yeah, so great journey to come and learn with Christ how to treat one another with dignity and honor and respect. As we finish up, let's talk about your writing mentorship program. And so yeah, what is it? What could people expect? What are the kind of people that should think about joining? Because I'm sure it may not be for everyone, but maybe it is. Maybe it some people aren't ready for it. So yeah, so tell us about your writing mentorship.
Yeah, so I was just trying to kind of target sort of a demographic that was hungry and had some talent for writing, but also was willing to like actually do some hard work around writing. And I don't mean hard work in terms of, you know, publishing a ton of articles. So the aim of the writing mentorship is not to publish. The aim is to to do the work. And so there's a ton of writing in it. There is a pretty high requirement for how much writing you're doing every single day in it. And the aim isn't to write perfect pieces. It's not to write, it's not to have a piece that's perfectly edited. The aim is to write what is, what you think about whatever it is, whatever the assignment is, what you honestly think about it today. So it's a little bit like that, you know, the assignment that you were just talking about with the test, kind of off the cuff. What do you think about this statement? A lot of that. So that's kind of what it entails. It's 12 weeks, and there's a lot of, you know, things that I have them listen to, things that I have them read. There's a peer-to-peer editing process in the course. And also one of the things that I have them do, I'm totally giving away all my secrets right now, but
I can bleep this whole part out, right?
is I have them actually bring their pieces back to people in their actual life. So not people that they know online, but people who know them flesh and blood, who will give them honest feedback. Because I think it's so easy to just get wrapped up in the, well, this is what so-and-so online is doing, so I must have to do that, or I want to do that because I want to be like them. And I think it's so important to go back to our people and just say, do you actually think God's calling me to this? And to ask them hard questions. And so that is a big piece of it, is that I have them ask a number of people in their life a list of like 10 questions that are painful. I mean, to be honest, to hear the answers will sting a little. And I think that's good. I think it's really good for writers to hear in some ways.
When will that open up again? When will you run it?
I usually run it in March, but with the book just coming out, I'm thinking I'll probably run it in the fall this year.
Okay, cool. So, well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes, and I'm sure there'll be links to that on sayable.net, Lori's website, where you can go and find that too. Lori, last thing, you're at a conference or, you know, in your email inbox in a couple of weeks, I'm sure you get this all the time. Just what's one thing you would encourage somebody who's beginning to write, and like, hey, they're actually a pretty good writer. But so to encourage them to keep growing and keep going, what would you say?
I'm really comforted. I can't remember the text right off the top of my head, but in Proverbs, there's a proverb that says, a man's gift makes room for him and brings him before kings. I'm really comforted by that, because I just think, man, there's no guarantee that God's going to, you know, pull a bestseller out of you. But if you have a gift, it's clear, and you're practicing at it, and you're trying to be faithful at it, you can trust that that gift is going to eventually bring you to the spaces that... I mean, you can hope for, and you can trust the Lord that he's going to bring you to those spaces that bring you the desires of your hearts, the desire of your heart. You don't have to, I think what I would say is, don't turn yourself into a pretzel trying to be what you think a writer needs to be. Because honestly, what a writer has to do today is not what a writer had to do 10 years ago, or what a writer will have to do in 10 years, just because the industry changes so quickly right now. So just be faithful, write. And trust that the Lord is going to do something with the gift that he's given you. And I believe that he will. I believe that's God's delight, is to do something with those gifts.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Lori, if people wanted to keep up with you on social media or in the World Wide Web, where would you point them to? Where would you tell them to go?
Sayable.net is where I write. And then I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Lori Wilbert, and it's L-O-R-E Wilbert.
What is the most common mispronunciation of your first name?
Most common is Lore.
Lore.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Which, you know, I wouldn't say it fits, but it's in the like ballpark of Writing.
Yeah, no. I used to have a site a long time ago. It's called Folklore.
How many sites have you had? Let's list them all. Let's count the
I'm gonna
ways.
list them all. I mean, I've been blogging since 2000, so I
One of
mean,
mine was
probably
Eat Bible. That was probably one of my favorite names.
I had Salt the Earth, but it was SALTHEARTH. So like Salt the Earth was one. I don't know.
Yeah, I've
I
had
can't remember. Like One Angel from a burlapped cashmere song. Oh gosh, I shouldn't say these. People are gonna go
Oh,
Google
this is great. Yeah, keep going.
them.
Expository Mutterings is one. I think that might actually be one.
Oh.
Yeah, Eat Bible, that was my favorite. A Gospel Life, it's like, wah, wah, like, of course, yeah. Let's see.
I've had Sayable for, I think it's been Sayable for 15 years now, which feels good.
Yeah, that feels good. That's right in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Because that's good, man. That's really good. Okay, well, I can't think of any more. I haven't been writing as long as you have. And any other ones I think of that people find, you'd be like, this guy's an idiot. Why are these things in existence? So, listeners, be sure to go pick up Lori's book. You can go on Amazon. You can go to christianbook.com and wherever books are sold. And you can go find that, lifeway.com and all those outlets. And you'll be able to find Handle with Care. How Jesus Redeems the Power of Touch in Life and Ministry. And you can be sure to leave a rating on iTunes for this episode or for the podcast. I'm not really sure how that works, but I always hear people say that at the end of each show. So I feel like I should say that too. And today's show has been produced by Jeff Metters, and the show music was mastered by Jeff Metters. Editing today was done by Jeff Metters. Production and all that is done by me. So support your local podcasts. Talk to your farmers market rep and tell them that you love podcasts. And as always, just keep writing.